Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 and FY24 earnings conference call of Metropolis Healthcare Limited, hosted by JM Financial. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements do not guarantee the future performance of the company, and it may involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Amey Chalke from JM Financial. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, and good morning, everyone. On behalf of JM Financial, I am Amey Chalke. Welcome you all for Metropolis 4Q FY24 earnings call. With us today, we have the Metropolis senior management team represented by Ameera Shah, Managing Director, Mr. Surendran Chemmenkotil, CEO, and Mr. Rakesh Agarwal, CFO. I will now hand over the call to Ms. Ameera ma'am for her opening remarks. Over to you, ma'am.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the Q4 FY24 earnings call. Today, I'm joined by our CEO, Surendran, Rakesh Agarwal, CFO, and SGA, our advisor. We've uploaded our updated results document on the stock exchange and website, and I hope everyone has an opportunity to go through the same. Talking about the industry trends, the diagnostic sector is expected to grow at about a 10% CAGR over the next five years. The organized segment of the industry is estimated to grow at a faster pace, marked by a transition from unorganized entities to larger organized players. Between 2020 and 2022, the industry also witnessed an influx of new entrants, attracted by the perceived high margins and return profile. However, most of them have realized that while entering the market is easy, scaling up profitable revenue poses a significant challenge for new entrants. And while aggressive pricing can play a role in creating the wellness market, it has not proven to be a silver bullet in the illness space. Health tech players had the hope of acquiring customers via wellness and then converting them to illness customers. However, the conversion rates of these have been low single digits, and therefore, these players have also now increased prices of wellness packages. Even globally, companies like Telenor, which were focused on wellness, and 23andMe, focused on wellness DNA testing, have been struggling as very few businesses in the pure wellness space build credibility amongst doctors or make profits. On the contrary, Metropolis and similar established players have benefited from an increase in post-COVID wellness trends, and having strong brand recognition and developing an omni-channel plan have been able to increase the share in the wellness segment. We've also seen hospital chains enter diagnostic segments in regional pockets where they believe their consumer brand is relatively stronger. While the perception is that they already have lab testing infrastructure and Doctor Connect, and therefore it's an easy pivot into diagnostics, the reality is that in healthcare, each area is expertise-led, and doctors' perception of expertise doesn't translate easily from hospitals to pathology experts. Also, hospitals face some inherent structural challenges, like the difficulty in attracting prescriptions from specialized doctors outside the hospital due to fear of patient loss to the doctors inside the hospital. Also, another challenge they face is on account of differential pricing inside and outside the hospital. With these continuing challenges, hospital entrants have largely focused on B2B business for routine and semi-specialized tests by using aggressive pricing strategies, which tends to be focused on the tail end of B2B customers who care more about pricing over other areas. While competition persists in this space, there has been a recent trend towards reduced competition intensity and more rational pricing strategies. Interestingly, the emergence of organized players in the industry has prompted a noticeable shift in customer attitudes towards organized diagnostic players. As a result, standalone labs operating in the unorganized sector have experienced a decline in market share. This shift highlights the growing preference among customers for the reliability, efficiency, and use of technology offered by the organized entity. Building a specialized diagnostics business is all about your expertise behind the scenes. it's not only about offering the largest test menu, but having the institutional knowledge for testing in each therapeutic area that produces a better quality report compared to others. At Metropolis, we are focused on the fastest growing therapeutic areas such as transplants, neurology, nephrology, gastroenterology, oncology, etc. Additionally, to be future-ready, we are investing deeply to build world-class testing in areas like genomics and molecular diagnostics, which is the future of the industry. Looking at these trends and opportunities in the industry, the opportunity for Metropolis is to continue to outpace the industry and peers, which will happen via organic and inorganic growth. For accelerated organic growth, we will do the following. We will focus on being the pioneer in new test advancement and amplify our engagement with specialty doctors to grow our specialty volumes. Number two, we'll also expand our collection center networks in new cities, which will be largely tier 2 and tier 3 markets of India. Three, we will heighten our service standards and digital market initiatives to improve the productivity of existing centers. And four, we will expand our B2B presence, not only in India, but also to new markets outside India, using our global reference lab in Bombay as a specialty hub for testing. This will be an asset-light model, which will be moving samples from outside India to Bombay for testing. When we look at inorganic growth, we will assess M&A opportunities through three lenses. Number one, we will acquire firms where we can get cutting-edge capabilities and skills within the technical testing sphere and sell through our large distribution network. Number two, we will acquire ethical and strong local brand B2C players in markets where we don't have a strong consumer plan in order to establish a foothold to grow from. Many of these local firms lack prudence in capital allocation and scaling operations to the next level. We intend to evaluate such targets nationwide and do multiple bolt-on acquisitions that will create accelerated growth. This would largely be in the regions of North and East, but also could be in specific cities in South and West, as our industry is hyper-local and not regional in nature. And number three, we could look at acquiring good quality brick-and-mortar firms, which are subscale and making inadequate profits, and use our management skills and advanced testing capabilities and strong brand recognition to scale these businesses and turn them around. For mergers and acquisitions, we adhere to predefined internal parameters encompassing IRR, growth prospects, EBITDA, PBT margins, along with return on capital and return on equity to assess possible acquisitions. Thankfully, there has been a moderation in valuation expectations compared to the COVID period, and we will be open to using options of internal cash accruals, external debt, and our own stock to complete deals. We would be financially conservative when allocating capital or raising debt. Currently, we see a fair number of opportunities to buy assets which meet our strategic and financial checklist. And to capitalize on this opportunity of consolidation, the company plans to alter its dividend payout from historic 30-35% of PAT to 15-20% of PAT for the next couple of years. Cash will be retained by the company for accelerated growth opportunities in terms of selective M&A, which we believe will fuel growth in the future. Once these growth initiatives are successfully executed, we will restore the dividend payout to historical levels, if not higher. Should there be a case of non-deployment of these funds for M&A, we will prudently return the cash via suitable options. Over the past two decades, we have successfully completed 23 acquisitions along the strategic thought process that have generated high IRRs for the company. While most were done at very reasonable valuations, it was the integration and the ability to drive a high organic growth from them that truly stands out. Since the integration of our most recent acquisition, Hitech, core revenues have shown significant growth, and with synergies and operational efficiencies, we have been able to enhance EBITDA margins also by 4%. Going forward, we are confident in our ability to do deals at fair valuation and integrate them well and execute plans to generate positive IRR from Metropolis. Over the past many years, my focus has been on professionalizing the company, and to accomplish this, I've been augmenting our talent pool from within the healthcare domain and from outside. In pursuit of this objective, I brought Suren on board approximately 18 months ago to spearhead our business execution efforts. With his extensive background in running scaled consumer-facing and distribution operations, Surendran has assumed full responsibility for driving the implementation of Metropolis strategy. Over the past 15 months, under his guidance, Metropolis has grown faster than industry and peers and significantly broadened its geographical presence, setting the base for future growth. With Surendran and the CXO team now firmly established and demonstrating a strong track record of execution and results, we believe it is the opportune moment to delineate and separate governance from operations and run the firm as a promoter-led but professionally managed company. Promoters in India who have successfully done this before have generated large value for shareholders, and I believe this is the right direction to go for Metropolis as well. Accordingly, I will be transitioning into the role of executive chairperson and whole-time director. In this capacity, my responsibilities will encompass driving the strategy of the business and monitoring it, strengthening governance, strategizing capital allocation, including driving M&A activities, acquiring talent, and fostering the culture at Metropolis. Meanwhile, Surendra and our CEO will lead the execution of all our operational initiatives while reporting to me. Surendra and I have worked together in this construct for the past 15 months, and we complement each other well. Together with our strong board, we will prioritize governance, strategy, and sustainability initiatives, aiming for even greater achievement. Let me also take the opportunity to thank our founder and chairman, Dr. Sushil Shah, who will now transition into the role of chairman emeritus. Under Dr. Shah's leadership, Metropolis has emerged as a trusted pathology brand, earning recognition from both medical professionals and consumers, solidifying its position as an industry leader. Dr. Shah's visionary leadership, commitment, and dedication have been instrumental in shaping the company's success. In his new capacity as chairman emeritus and director on the board, Dr. Shah will continue to provide invaluable guidance to the board and team, drawing upon his extensive medical experience and expertise to offer mentorship. We express our heartfelt gratitude to Dr. Shah for his years of service and support in propelling Metropolis to greater heights. With this, I hand over the call to Surendran to take you through the quarter and the year gone by and give some flavor of our strategy for FY25 and beyond. Thank you, and over to you, Surendran.
Thanks, Amira, and good morning, everyone. Let me take you through the business highlights for this quarter gone by and along with the strategies going forward. For quarter four 24, we are happy to report 11% year-on-year growth on reported revenues and a 15% year-on-year growth in our core revenues with corresponding volume growth of almost 7% and on 7% on account of product mix, change and realization benefits. We have delivered industry-leading volume growth over the last 9 quarters and are optimistic about the growth trajectory going forward. Our B2C revenue have grown faster at 20% year-on-year basis and quarter four with the volume growth of 7% and a 13% increase in RPP, attributable to the recent price increase implemented in January and shifts in product mix. We are pleased to report that the price hike has been effectively absorbed, and despite this increase, our volumes have maintained at a growth rate of 7% plus. Alongside, our revenues from Mumbai market have grown by 20%, underscoring our increased market share and brand pull in our core geographies. Our specialized and wellness testing grew by 17% and 22% respectively on year-on-year basis, in line with our strategy of expanding our specialized and wellness business. Despite some competitive intensity on B2B side, we have been able to grow our B2B revenues by 11% for quarter four with corresponding volume growth of 7%. The discounting in the B2B segment has reduced as compared to full year 23, and B2B volumes have grown positive recovery. More and more players are preferring trusted labs with experience on the track of better service and quality of diagnosis. Let me share some light on the network expansion and outcome of the same. Over the past 2 years, we have dedicated efforts to extend our presence across India. In the last 12 months, we have added 24 new labs, with 7 labs added in the last quarter. Our plan for the current financial year entails the addition of another 25 more labs in strategic locations to target underserved markets, thereby aiming for accelerated revenue growth and market share expansion. In tandem with lab expansion, we are focused on expanding our collection center network and distribution channels. Full year 24, we have added more than 550 centers, including 150 odd centers in the last quarter alone. Our footprint has expanded from 307 towns in April 23 to 600 towns by the time we exited last year. With all these efforts, we have been able to grow our revenues from other cities by 34% for the quarter four and 28% in full year 24 respectively. Growth from the other cities largely on the back of growth and revenues from Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities. Our new labs are also showing robust growth over the last 2-3 quarters with revenue contribution of 4% for the full year 24. In addition to prioritizing network expansion, volume and revenue growth, we have placed equal emphasis on efficiency, productivity and margin improvement. We are pleased to announce that our reported EBITDA margins stood at 25.5% for the quarter 4 24. Prior to factoring in CSR and ESO, this is 26.5%, and if we add back the dilution cost in the short term by the new labs, our EBITDA stood at 27.4% for the same period. We maintain an optimistic outlook regarding the sustenance of quarter four margins in full year 25. Upon the completion of our accelerated lab and network expansion by the end of 25, we are anticipating that the enhanced revenue stemming from both existing and new labs will further enhance our margin profile post full year 25. Speaking of our organic strategies, we have been focusing on basically 4 or 5 big things. Infra expansion into new markets to target accelerated growth with lab network and expansion of distribution channels. We have been focusing on technology transformation, both on the front end, consumer facing for convenience to customer experience being improvised, and also to strengthen our back-end digital infrastructure to improve our service level. With increased focus on technology and digital marketing, we have been able to acquire new customers via the digital route, and revenue contribution led by digital channels has shown robust growth in full year 24. We have also revamped our True Health wellness packages to suit right for consumer needs with focus on bundled testing packages curated for specific target audience and also upselling to existing customers. We have also taken multiple initiatives to enhance our service levels for B2B customers. We have set up dedicated relationship managers and special programs for our B2B clients along with centralized help desk, B2B partner portal for strong support system, etc. As a result, we have seen an increase in B2B volumes with rationalization in discounts over the last 2-3 quarters. Lastly, as highlighted by Amira earlier, we have strengthened our leadership bench, simplified the organization structure, and have fortified our organization's capacity for efficient planning, execution, and leadership continuity. The wealth of experience and diverse backgrounds that these senior professionals bring from various industries enriches our collective knowledge base, and enhances our ability to navigate complex challenges and seize the opportunities. Their contributions extend beyond formulation of strategies and play a pivotal role in executing the roadmap ahead of us. Going forward, with the brand strength of Metropolis, talent pool, trusted partners for doctors and consumers, coupled with aggressive expansion plans, foray into adjacencies with opportunities of inorganic growth, we are optimistic of outnumbering in the industry growth in terms of revenue growth and profitability. With this, I'll hand it over to Rakesh for the financial update.
Thank you. Thank you, Suren, and good morning, everybody. Let me share some of the key financial performance for the quarter. Reported revenue for quarter four financial year 24 stood at 313 crore, a growth of 11% Y&Y. Our core revenue, excluding revenue for COVID and COVID-allied and PPP contract, grew by 15% Y-on-Y for Q4 financial year 24. Our core revenue for financial year 24 grew by 13.3% Y-on-Y with 9% volume growth and approximately 4% on account of price increase and product mix change. Reported EBITDA for the quarter stood at rupees 79.7 crore as compared to 69.2 crore, a growth of 15%. Reported EBITDA margin for Q4 24 stood at 25.5%. EBITDA margin adjusted for ESOP, CSR and new lab margin dilution stood at 27.4% for Q4 financial year 24. EBITDA for the full year stood at rupees 284.6 crore with EBITDA margin of 23.9%. One-off expenses of rupees 6.8 crore has been booked on account of whistleblower and Aam Aadmi Mohalla Clinic provision for financial year 24. PAT for the quarter stood at rupees 36.1 crore with margin at 11.6%. PAT for full year stood at rupees 128.1 crore with 10.8% margin. Moving on to balance sheet, we are happy to share that we have paid all our debt in the last quarter and have zero debt as on 31st March 2024. We have a net cash surplus of rupees 117 crore as on 31st March 2024. Our working capital days have reduced from 14 days on March 23 to 7 days on March 24. Our OFC to EBITDA has improved by 3% and stood at 105%, indicating a higher cash conversion cycle. The company has aligned the accounting year of its four overseas subsidiaries with the Indian accounting year with effect from 1st April 2024. Because of this change, the accounting year for the purpose of consolidation will henceforth be 31st March. For the transition year, that is financial year 23-24, the accounting impact of this change is an increase in revenue of Rs. 18.27 crore and PAT by Rs. 0.4 crore. That's all from my side. With this, I open the floor for Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking the question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for the moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Anshul Agarwal from MK. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Great, thank you for the opportunity. My first question is on the quantification of any sums that we would be keeping aside for this M&A activity in the next 2 years.
So currently we have, I think, approximately 120 crores cash on our books, if I'm not mistaken, Rakesh. We'll obviously be using this internal accruals plus, you know, raising debt or using stock as equity. It's difficult to obviously quantify an amount as of today because, you know, there are a bunch of things being evaluated. My sense is that if we ever do look at raising debt, we would not look at it beyond 2 to maximum 2.5 times our EBITDA. And if we were to use obviously stock as currency, then that would potentially play out well as well if the stock price is, valuable for us. So I don't have an exact number for you at this point because there are many things in the pipeline. But we'll obviously look at each deal from an IRR and a ROCE, ROE perspective.
Got it. And while you have outlined the strategy behind selecting these M&A targets, would there be any specific region that we would be planning to target?
So as I mentioned, you know, we have three strategies for the M&A, and one of them is our geographical expansion strategy, right, which would be primarily in, we would look at obviously North and East, which are the markets where we would like to expand through a sort of a B2C route. That's one of the opportunities that we are sort of looking at, one of the lens of M&A. But these, as I said, could also be in South and West of India because, you know, there are still markets in South and West, certain cities in which we may not have a strong B2C brand. And entering those markets may also be useful. So I would say primarily North and East, but also South and West for the geographical expansion strategy. The other two strategies, which are about technical capability, which obviously could be anywhere in the location in the country. And the third one, which could be, a regional player or any other kind of player, could be in any part of the country because you're looking at taking businesses which may not be necessarily providing the kind of profit on their own either because they're subscale or need better management and picking those up and actually sort of being able to turn them around under our management skills and scaling possibilities.
Got it. Thanks. My second question is on any indicative broad margin guidance for FY26 post our network expansion plans?
See, I think we are comfortable with our Q4 margin. We believe that we will, you know, be able to sustain that into the next year hopefully try to expand it as the volumes grow and we're able to execute some synergies. So I think 25.5 to 26 percent margin, give or take, I think is sustainable.
This would be reported margin, right?
That's right.
Thank you so much. All the very best.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and 1 to ask question. The next question is from the line of Amey Chalke from JM Financial Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. Ma'am, there was a period when nationalized diagnostic chains were being impacted with the proliferation of e-commerce players who were cutting the prices. Now we are seeing the trend reversal where most of the nationalized chains or larger chains who are having good physical presence are outgrowing the market. Is this only linked to pricing in your assessment or anything else which is also driving this?
See, I think when health tech firms came in, it was during COVID or some of them which had started just before COVID. And it was a black swan event that really gave rise to digital usage, which obviously helped. We saw in many industries there. We saw it in ed tech, we saw it in food tech, we saw it in many industries, really. And we saw it in health tech as well. No, mostly because a lot of the unorganized centers were closed because they couldn't operate due to lack of employees, etc. And it gave rise to more of this home testing, home collection, especially for COVID. Now, in some industries, obviously, that trend consistently sustained. But in our industry, once COVID sort of came down, people actually prefer to go into brick-and-mortar labs and actually give their samples. While the home testing, home collection has grown compared to pre-COVID, it has definitely still a minority share compared to what people walking into brick-and-mortar. So pricing was never really the key. Even that time, the health tech firm used convenience as a way to really drive their business. What they used pricing for was for wellness, expanding of the wellness market. Because in the wellness market, there's no need and you're actually doing a push product to create a need of preventive healthcare. And when they used pricing to create that kind of awareness, as I mentioned, it helped the incumbents a lot because it actually created a new market that didn't exist before, which was a preventive care, which was earlier a very small market. So it has actually been beneficial to the incumbents as well. But that preventive care market, while it's growing fast, it is not growing at the pace it was growing in COVID anymore. So I think, for the healthcare firms, really now the question is about, where should they really play? What is going to be really their unique, what they bring to the table? And I think many of them are figuring out what that means for them. From our perspective, pricing is never been the most important thing in illness in healthcare. Because at the end of the day, you fall sick once or twice a year. And the more sick you are, the more critical your illness. You're really not looking at who's giving you something 50 rupees or 100 rupees cheaper. You're looking at who's best in class to get the best diagnosis, usually recommended by your doctor, so you can get treated quickly.
Sure.
I hope that answers your question.
Sure, ma'am. And the second question I have is on the expansion side. We have been saying that we are adding around 20, 30 labs over 1 year. Why not 40 or 50 or why not 10? What is it that decides this number? Generally for businesses, there is a capital limitation to expand or management bandwidth or maybe a lack of opportunity or some of them are not ready to take the financial hit. What is it in our case that decides this factor organically? How much labs we will be adding going ahead? How do we decide?
I'll give you my input and Surin can come in as well. Look, in my opinion, the only reason the science behind this number 30 is that earlier we were, until about FY19-20, we were only adding about 4-5 labs a year. You have to remember the lab is only a factory which does the testing. The demand generation really happens when you go to the customers, you build collection centers, and you are able to build demand in those collection centers. The hard part is not in building a lab. Could we set up 100 labs in a year? The answer is yes. The question is, can you generate demand in all those locations? Because for an average lab, you need at least 20-30 centers and B2B customers to be able to fill that lab. So really, it's about getting the right quality of talent on the front end, training them, and to be able to go and scientifically sell to doctors and generate that demand, and set up those collection centers. Unlike other industries which have ready distribution, whether it's pharma or modern trade, in our industry, we have to set up each distribution point. So it's not like a product that we just push through an existing distribution. So really, that's where the time goes in getting the right talent, training, and setting up the distribution and generating. Suren, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think you have covered it all, Ameera. I think if at all I can add one more thing. Like, see, setting up a lab doesn't, start from the day you start, working on the infrastructure of the lab, but it actually starts almost a year before. you know, we have to enter into a city, we need to, you know, familiarize with the metropolis reports, and we need to get the channels appointed, and then we do start getting some level of, you know, customers and revenue from that market. And once the revenue reaches a particular level, that's the time then we start looking at putting up a lab there. So I think the whole process takes a little slightly time consuming, and it's based on analytics, it's based on a lot of hard efforts. And hence, it may be prudent for us to do it more judiciously and at the right places, you know, and at the right pace. So like Amira said, you know, the previous 2 years, you know, put together, we have set up 30 labs. And last year alone, we set up 24, 25 labs. So we definitely speeded up the process. And this year, again, we are going to put up another 25 labs. So the required speed has almost been brought in. And once we get this as our norms, and, you know, and even if there's an opportunity to get into any other market in the coming years, we will look at it. But otherwise, we are pretty happy with the current pace, and, you know, and also with ability to turn around the new labs into profitable ones in the about 2 years' time.
Sure. Thank you so much. I will join back.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask question. The next question is from the line of Kunal Randeria from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. So, Amira, just one of the points you made, you know, that a sick patient definitely looked at quality and not really the price. So, you know, while I completely am with you on that, but on the wellness front, you know, do you think pricing is a lot more important factor than it is in sickness, and perhaps this is where some of the online days would have an advantage over a traditional place?
Sure. See, on the wellness side, you have to remember there is no one kind of customer. There are different kinds of customers, right? If you look at a customer segmentation, you have a more health-conscious customer or a more brand-conscious customer who is more educated and aware. Usually, they will prefer, if they're doing a health checkup once a year, you know, and they're going to spend 2,000 rupees, they are not thinking, oh, let me go and spend only 1,200 rupees with somebody new who I've not experienced and take a chance on my health check. Because you have to understand, why are you doing a health check? It's to find something early that you are able to then treat so that it doesn't become a much bigger issue. So there is a large amount of trust that is required, whether it is in illness or whether it is in wellness. But in wellness, because the doctor is not involved, consumers can be a very variety. So the health-conscious, educated customer will still choose a brand which they are trusting. A slightly less aware customer may say that, look, let me go on price because sub same test they did, same result they did. That might be their perception. And those people, those customers who have a wrong perception that all results are the same, may go for a lower price and choose, you know, somebody who's sort of giving a more discounted price, right? But finally, the question is that if it's being done at the discounted price, is there a structural cost advantage that health tech players have? And the answer is no. Actually, there is nothing differently being done that makes it cheaper. Only probably the levels of quality control and quality will be different between, you know, the top incumbents and maybe some of the health tech players. Now, there's no structural cost advantage in actually doing it the way they are doing it. And therefore, it is about burning cash in the short term to acquire customers and then hoping that those customers will come to you again and again, or hoping that those customers will convert to illness and that's how you'll recover your money. So I think it's more of a difference in business model than I think it is really a structural cost advantage that they have.
Sure. Just taking forward from there, does your B2B business include some business from the online players?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
So sorry, I meant, does a B2B business include the business from online players, and they may, you know, the order might be generated on the website, but you would be maybe, you know, your lab would be analyzing the sample.
Yeah, so the B2B business includes some of the online players and aggregators, but that contribution is very, very low for us, you know. It's largely through the B2B labs and hospitals, you know, that we generate revenue on B2B segment.
Sure. And just one more question, if I can. So just taking forward the discussion on lab expansion. So I think in the previous quarter, you had shared that, you know, you've added somewhere, I think, 50 labs in the last 3 years. And these two act as a dilution to your EBITDA margin. It's around 100, 120 bps, right? So the fact that you are going to add more labs in future, does your sort of guidance break, these expansion plans for the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah. So, like I mentioned, in the last year, the 24 labs that we added had a EBITDA dilution of roughly 1%, right? And the next 1 year also, we will add another 25 labs, and we will have an equal amount of dilution of the EBITDA of 1%. But the guidance that we have said, 25.5%-26%, is already considering that, lab addition-related dilution. So that's how it's going to be. Maybe after full year 25 and beyond that, and I think our lab addition may not be at this pace, and hence, we will be able to see a little more expansion of the margins, beyond the full year 25.
Sure. But any very indicative number you can give that beyond 25, how many you plan to add and what part of the country you're targeting?
We will be adding about, maybe 6, 7, 8 labs beyond 25, and we will go to specific markets that we want to penetrate further. And, this number could be definitely well under 10. So that's our current estimate.
Got it. Got it. And sorry, just one more if I can. Ameera, Mumbai is the biggest market, yet your revenue has been growing in double digits. Just want to understand what has been driving it. Are you adding more centers or is it more package steps? How is it and what should we expect going forward?
Let me answer this, for you. Basically, three things, One is our distribution expansion in Mumbai continues, right? And we are expanding enough number of, the service centers and collection centers in Mumbai. And we still see there's a good opportunity going forward. And we'll also get into the peripheries of Mumbai. And we believe that, we could rather set up a collection center for every 2.5-3 kilometers in Mumbai. So we really clearly see an opportunity to further expand in Mumbai, and that will continue. And the second one is, of course, we are our specialty business. Mumbai has got all the top of the hospitals in the country, and hence, our engagement with the doctors in the top hospitals is getting amplified. And, we are trying to, expand our business on the B2B segment also here. So, and also the third thing is our existing centers, we are not allowing the productivity of the existing centers to drop any, despite the increase in, the number of centers that we are adding. So we have a very, very clear and dedicated focus on expanding the productivity of the existing centers. So a combination of these three things is what is actually driving our volumes in Mumbai.
Hello? Sorry, I was on mute. Can you remind us how many centers you have in Mumbai and how many you plan to add in the next 2 to 3 years?
Mumbai, we have about 430 centers we have in Mumbai, and we want to take this number to 500 plus in the coming year or so.
Perfect. Thank you very much, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask question. The next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning and thank you for taking my question. Just the first one is, Ameera, on the opening remarks, you talked about the two kinds of competition. I'm just more interested in the hospital based competition, right? So if you could elaborate, I think you made 2 points, but just elaborate. One was on B2B and the other one was the dissonance between pricing of hospital labs versus outside, inside and outside. So if you could just clarify on those 2 points or elaborate on that, please. Thank you.
Sure. So if you see today as a customer, if you walk into a top sort of 20, 30 hospital, you will find the prices of pathology of tests inside these hospitals is significantly higher, you can say 50 to 100% higher compared to, let's say, Metropolis or other incumbent prices outside. So there is a much higher pricing when you actually go to the hospital and do these tests. So when hospitals go outside to consumers, some cases they are choosing to have a lower pricing when they go to consumers outside. But that, as you can understand, creates a dissonance for customers and for consumers, right? Because there's no logic why, or there's limited logic why the pricing is so different inside and outside a hospital. And that actually limits the hospital's ability to actually control the pricing outside, because they already have a very high pricing inside the hospital. So that becomes one structural problem and one fundamental issue for hospitals. The second issue for hospitals that I mentioned was that you have to remember that hospital's business is about bringing patients to the hospital and then doing everything under the aegis of the hospital, right? But so there are doctors which are sitting outside, if there's a gynecologist sitting outside the hospital, and that gynecologist refers that patient to the hospital, the worry will always be that, listen, will the patient then go to a gynecologist inside the hospital? And therefore, you know, there is sometimes there gets to be a concern for doctors outside the hospital to refer those patients to the hospital or to the hospital collection center. So these are the two structural issues that hospitals may face, and in the B2C side of the business. And therefore, I was saying that, you know, many of them have focused much more on the B2B side of the business. And either they are going to small hospitals, nursing homes, where they're doing 5 lakhs business, 10 lakhs business of pathology per month, and trying to do management contracts for these small hospitals, which we find in our experience tends to be a very, very poor margin and poor receivables. Therefore, we don't do that business much at all. Or it tends to be on the B2B side, you know, where you're going to the customers which are on the tail end. Because if hospitals go to the other top hospitals and say, you give me your business, there's a competition there. So that doesn't happen. So they have to go to the labs, which are the unorganized sector, to say that, look, why don't you outsource a thyroid or a vitamin D, like a more common test to me. That tends to be more price sensitive. So these are some of the sort of challenges that come up in the B2C and the B2B side for any player.
Yeah, I mean, just harping on this again. So when an Apollo Diagnostics, which is the chain outside the hospital, puts up like a 500 crore revenue number for the fiscal in a 12-month basis, you would imagine this is also probably cannibalizing their own inpatients. I'm just trying to understand, or it's largely led on B2B. That's the color I'm unable to understand.
So I would not like to comment on any individual player, but what I can share with you is that a lot of the players, some of the business comes from their own hospitals. Some of their business comes from other ventures that they have in healthcare potentially. There are people who are doing multiple things in healthcare. So it comes from captive, you know, their own sort of service facilities. Some of it may come from an online digital, and a large amount of it will come from B2B and these HLM contracts. So when you have, when you set up these collection centers, for example, Metropolis reports separate B2C revenues and B2B, but most players, what they do is they report generalized revenues. And therefore, whether a patient is walking into a center, a collection center, or whether that collection center is picking up a sample from B2B is not necessarily fully clear. So therefore, there is no data that you may get, but from the ground, we are aware that a lot of this tends to be B2B.
Got it. Helpful. Just a second question is on the outlook for fiscal 25. While we talked about margin guidance, you know, trying to sustain at fourth quarter levels, what's our outlook on revenue for fiscal 25, and how we could likely split this between volume and price or ASP? Thanks.
Sure. So, you want to take that?
Yeah. So, see, we have delivered, you know, 13.3% you know, year-on-year growth during the last year. We're really looking forward to taking this further beyond this number, and definitely looking forward for mid-teens kind of a growth in the year, you know, full year 25. And the volumes, I mean, the split could be maybe the volume is 8 to 9%, and you know, 5 to 6% may be coming from the, you know, the realization. That could be the split.
This includes the 3% increase we took in Jan, and there is also a mix change towards, I'm just trying to see where the 5% comes from, 5 or 6%.
Yeah, it's a combination of both the mix change as well as the price increase that we have taken.
That's helpful. My last question, just bookkeeping one. When I look at slide 17, last column, we have the 15-month data. We also have fiscal 24, few columns before, which is the one which doesn't include 15 months. So when we talk about flat margins, I'm unable to understand. It should be actually 25.5, right? When we look at guidance for fiscal 25.
Yeah. So we are saying 25.5 is the actual margin, and when we add up just these four entities for quarter four, in for additional 3 months, the marginally the reported EBITDA goes up from 25.5 to 25.6, because this entity has just reported a bit higher margin in January to March. So the guidance is on 25.5% only.
Got it. Yeah, helpful. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask question. The next question is from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Spark PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I have two questions. You know, if I look at the data days, they're still at around 30 days. So how much can they reduce in the coming year? And secondly, if I look at, you know, the premium wellness segment, it's steadily growing for us and is now almost 15% of sales. So what is driving this? Is it self-awareness? Is it doctor advocacy? And if you could, you know, comment on the ARPU in this segment, is it top 5-10 cities or is it beyond that? And, you know, some color will be helpful.
Yeah, so I will take the debtors thing and then hand over to Suren for the next question. So, debtors we have been maintaining and reducing substantially in last 3-4 years. You see, we were at around 46-47 days and now it is coming down to 30 days. Definitely, it's also a combination of, you know, your cash and credit business. So now, going forward, this year, we are planning to reduce it at least by 20%. So we will be, you know, aiming to come down to 24 to 25 days of debtors, if you, you know, as per the target we have internally taken, and then keep improving it, you know, year on year basis. So that is definitely, there is a lot of focus is there, and 31 days last year has come down to 30 days, and we should move approximately around 25 days next year. I'm just handing over Suren to answer the next question.
See, on the wellness expansion, you know, basically there are two ways of looking at it. One is definitely the external reasons, which is one, the consumer awareness, the increasing consumer awareness, wanting to get his health checkups done on time, etc. And also, a lot of awareness been created by the health tech players in the past by huge advertisements and, you know, the price, etc. And hence, now more and more people are coming the banner of, you know, getting the wellness check done on a regular basis, you know, then we are getting the advantage of that both. And internally, if you ask me, there are two or three things that we definitely do. One is the upsell at our centers. You know, when a patient walks into a center, even with an illness, our ability to, upsell a full panel or maybe a wellness package, you know, at every center that we operate, you know, it's getting increasingly better. You know, so that's one place where definitely we are able to increase the wellness volumes. And second is our digital initiatives, you know, our website, our app, etc., where we, and all the way we reach out in the social media. So that's definitely able to get some traction on the wellness. Third thing is our own customer base. You know, we have now a good, marketing CRM available with us, our ability to reach back to the customers on a lifecycle management, reminding them on time about their next wellness checkup and on the base of certain illness patterns, advising them about the best packages and the best panels. So all this is helping us. There's a combination of all both these external internal activities, actions that we take put together there is taking the wellness revenues, which has grown 22% last quarter and the last year. So, and we see that, you know, this can be further expanded in the days to come.
And, you know, is it top city-centric? If you could give some insights into, you know, what has been the realization or the ARPU per patient in this segment for us and what are we looking at?
Yeah, so definitely the big city, the top 4-5 cities, you know, the wellness growth is much better. If you ask me, Mumbai, Chennai, Bangalore, etc., you know, Pune, etc., the wellness growth is relatively higher. But definitely the next set of cities also picking up. As we said, was the reasons I mentioned it to you. The wellness growth is picking up. The base is relatively smaller in some of these cities, but the growth rates are much better. Right, so the wellness, overall the wellness awareness is definitely picking up tier 1, tier 2 cities and we are able to see the traction. And the average revenue on the wellness package is about 2400 and 2400 we are able to see a 200-300 rupees of growth over the last two quarters before versus now because of the realignment and the restructuring of the packages that we have done in the month of November, December.
Fine. Understood. That was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashita Jain from Nuvama Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. I have one question on the volume growth. I think this quarter we reported 7% patient growth versus high single digit that we usually report in the last three, four quarters. Just wanted to understand, could there be an impact of price increase taken in B2C? Are you seeing any impact in those markets? Or this is just a seasonal phenomenon and it should phase out as we expand going forward?
Yeah, that's right. You know, we have seen in our non-core markets, you know, we have seen slight softness on the volumes after the, you know, the price increases. Immediately after the price increases have been done, maybe the first quarter. And then we are also now seeing that is getting stabilized, and you know, we are trying to see we are seeing this is coming back to the normalcy. And also we have done some few corrections in some of the markets. We found that, you know, the impact was relatively higher. So, but overall, there is some softness in some of the non-core markets as a result of the pricing. Like any industry, if you have seen that whenever there's a price increase happen, there's a little bit of heat on the volumes, but then it stabilizes maybe in one quarter or two quarter. And we clearly seen that maybe by the end of quarter two, the volumes will come back to our earlier levels for sure.
Okay, this is helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tushar Manudhane from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity. Just on this core business slide, as I see, the number of patients visit and the number of tests has increased at a similar rate in FY24. And effectively, let's say test per patient is largely stable at 2. But at the same time, there has been good increase in B2C or let's say the preventive healthcare space where typically the number of tests taken by patient is higher. So some disconnect here, or am I missing in terms of understanding this?
I'm not sure whether I really got the question right, but you know, the revenue per patient on the B2C has gone up higher because...
No, not revenue per patient. I meant test per patient.
Test per patient, you know. I think it's 7% only, right? 7.8% is the test per patient.
Test,
what they've grown up.
Test per patient is almost 2 for FY24 as well as FY23. And both number of tests as well as number of patient visits have increased at a similar rate of 8.8%. For core business.
Yeah, let me comment on this. See, one of the things is that when we declare our test volumes, and for example, we declare a wellness profile as one test, not as, if even if it has 10 tests inside it, we declare it as one test. So as there is a movement of some patients upselling and bundling the packages, even though the number of tests are increasing, you are not necessarily seeing that reflecting in the test per patient. Right? Now going forward into FY25, we are planning to change the way we are presenting that. And we are trying to recalibrate the numbers where we are able to give the real test volume, including the breakup within the wellness packages. So just bear with us, and hopefully in a quarter or so, we should be able to align that goal.
That's really helpful. And just secondly, maybe in FY24, some amount of price increase was actually with respect to reduction in the discount per se. So is there any further scope to reduce the discount? And if you could elaborate on in terms of pricing separately on routine tests, on premium wellness and specialized tests, that would be helpful.
See, I don't think discount is going to change much. It didn't change much from last 2 years. There was a slight decrease in the discount. And I think what we were referring to is that basically we have seen a marginal decrease, which means that the competitive intensity has sort of stabilized, right? Because the discount is not going up, but it's actually stable and marginally sort of coming down. So there's not too much of a difference that really is going to attribute any benefit in terms of that. As far as the price increase on the different segments, you know, the way the price increases are done, you know, is obviously done on across the spectrum. But we look at sort of, you know, competition prices, local and national. We also look at our cost base, and that's how we do it. I don't think we have a breakup of the price increase across the segment. But largely, it would be pretty similar, across the segments. I don't think you'll find too much of a difference. But probably you'll find a higher price increase for routine because you get B2C through that and some increase on specialized. You'll probably find a lesser price increase on semi-specialized as a segment because that area tends to come a little bit more from B2B, which tends to be a little bit more price on.
Understood. And just to connect this on the final aspect in the sense, so effectively the cost per test also then, does it remain more or less stable irrespective of whether it is routine, specialized or premium wellness? And so effectively that converts to better profitability?
No, I mean your cost per test is different for every test, right? So for example, your gross margins on routine tend to be higher, but your gross margins on specialized tend to be lower. Even though you may find a different result on a net margin basis. Because your material cost is only obviously only one cost. Your servicing cost, your production cost is also additional. So generally we find that the specialty segment tends to be a fairly profitable net margin segment. And that's one of the reasons why Metropolis strategy is focused on B2C because that channel tends to give you better profitability. Doesn't matter which test comes through that channel. And specialty as a segment, again, doesn't matter which channel it comes through, but specialty as a segment, we find tends to be a better profitability. And obviously builds a stronger moat for the business because very few people are able to actually compete in this segment and provide the kind of quality of results that we do.
Understood. That's helpful. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vinod from Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Just a clarification on an earlier question regarding guidance. So when you say mid-teen growth, last year on the base we had some non-core businesses because of which the reported growth was lower, but the core growth, like you said, was 13.3%. So when we look at FY25, are all the non-core businesses out of the base on in FY24? So will the reported growth be in the mid-teen range or will there be some adjustment still to be made?
Yes, you are right. In fact, from this quarter onwards, the reported revenue is equal to core revenue is equal to the group revenue. So there's only, everything is same for this year. What we guidance we provided is for the reported revenues.
And what Surin mentioned is that the growth, which was 13.3% from a core basis last year, can go up to mid-teen. So the guidance would be 13 to 15% would be sort of the guidance that we would provide for FY24.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you very much for the clarification.
Thank you. As that was the last question for the day, I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us today and being part of us with, in this quarter and in this journey. And it's been a very, interesting and exciting year for Metropolis. We've done lots of changes from the technology side, lots of rollouts, including obviously a price change, including some leadership and management changes. And I think despite all these changes, which obviously sometimes cause some flux within the business, we've managed to really demonstrate a great set of results, a strong volume growth, ability to be able to take price increases, and ability to be able to really navigate our expansion despite all of the changes. And I think we're very excited about FY25 as well. We feel confident of our team. We feel confident of our aggression on the ground. And we've really put in a lot of the ingredients this last year on the revenue side as well as on the cost side to be able to really demonstrate a good set of results next year. Our focus is also going to move to not only the financials, but also really focusing on the sustainability of the business, the governance of the business, and really ensuring our processes and systems only get tighter as we move along. So very excited about next year, and we believe that the industry has, like we said, settled down. And it gives us the right platform to continue to be able to execute really well and be able to, create more value for all the shareholders. Thank you so much. Surin, is there anything you would like to add?
No, that's good enough, Amira, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you. On behalf of JM Financial Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.